is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Democrats will occupy all 9 seats on Cincinnati City Council during the next term. Anna Albee will replace Liz Keating, the lone Republican on council. She's best known as a local group lead for Moms Demand Action, who's worked with elected leaders and law enforcement to reduce gun violence. Anna Albee joins me now to talk about her priorities in the new term and the challenges facing the city. Welcome to the program, Councilmember-elect Albee.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. I grew up in a big public radio household, so this is very surreal being in the studio with you.
Thank you so much. It's great to have you. It's great to have you here. Do you have questions or comments about Cincinnati City Council's upcoming term? You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Let's start at the beginning. What inspired you to run for council in the first place? Why did you decide this was something you wanted to take on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been volunteering in the gun violence prevention space for a handful of years. I actually joined the group called Moms Demand Action when I lived in Chicago years ago. And when I moved back to my hometown of Cincinnati, they were the first phone call I made to say, hey, how can I help? And after a couple years, was able to take over as the local group lead for Moms Demand Action. And through that work, have just been working closely with, like you said in the intro, lawmakers, law enforcement, and community partners in addressing gun violence. So looking at policy. And let me tell you, Ohio is a tough state when it comes to gun laws and gun violence prevention policy. But also, you know, working closely with local law enforcement around promoting secure firearm storage, making sure people understand the importance of locking up your guns, which is something now that is an ordinance here in Cincinnati, which we're very excited about, you know, and working with community partners such as Mitch Morris, who I think we'll be hearing from later today, also pediatricians and children who are doing great work. So doing all of that and just realizing from my worldview that making sure that we have the right people in elected in office to make these decisions who are willing to push for safer policy, but also understanding the wider issues that kind of lead to violence. So making sure people are paid enough to have a roof over their head, fresh food on the table, access to health care, that we're investing into community programs, that's really what it comes down to when we talk about, curbing gun violence here in Cincinnati. So all of that together, plus serving on my Madisonville Community Council, really just led me to the place where this is a step I wanted to take and work hard for our city.
Yeah. So it sounds like you decided, hey, I'm doing this important work. I really believe in it. But in this other role as a city council member, I can do more. You can have a larger impact. Was that what it kind of came down to?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I have a full-time job separately. so this, you know, all the volunteering I was doing was on what I call the side of my desk. But it was a thing that got me up each morning where I realized, like, this is where my passion is. This is where I want to be working. This is how I want to make a difference and give back to my community. So wanting to take that next step to be able to push for the policies, to help my neighbors and have that direct influence and really be that person at the table who can help shape the community for the better.
Yeah. You mentioned that you got involved with Moms Demand Action when you lived in Chicago years ago. What got you involved in that? How did you get started with that organization?
Yeah. So I often recount I had this one totally unhinged Facebook post after a mass shooting where I was yelling at the lawmakers being like, how dare you take money from the gun lobby, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, when you post on social media, maybe in the moment you feel better, but it doesn't really make as much of an impact. And so after there had been a series of shootings in Cincinnati, Dayton, Pittsburgh, where I went to college, in Chicago, waking up to the news each day, I really felt like I wanted to do more than scream on social media. And Moms Demand Action is an amazing organization with great infrastructure that lets you plug right in to make a difference. We have 10 million members nationally and groups in every single state, multiple here in Ohio. So that was a spot where I felt like I could take my passion, my energy, my anger, to be honest, when it comes to, you know, witnessing these horrific shootings so often and really funneled into something productive and to give back.
I want to remind our listeners, I'm talking with Cincinnati City Council member-elect Anna Albee, who was elected to Cincinnati City Council earlier this month and takes office in January. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Obviously, gun violence prevention was a huge part of your campaign.
talk about your priorities in that regard. What more do you think the city can do that City Council hasn't already taken on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't want to get ahead of my skis here since I'm not yet in office, so I have to wait until January. But I think there is more we can do around the legislation. So for those listening who maybe aren't familiar with gun laws here in Ohio, at the state level, there's something called a preemption law. And it basically says what's written at the state level overrules what you do locally. So and to be clear, in Ohio, state law says you can have permitless carry, no background checks, you know, concealed carry, all that. However, Cincinnati and the city of Columbus implemented gun safety ordinances. Here in Cincinnati, we implemented two, one requiring secure firearm storage earlier this year, and the other one preventing those convicted of domestic violence from owning or using a firearm. And as a couple months ago, they were upheld by Judge Jennifer Branch in the court using a thing called home rule, which is a thing here in Ohio that says that cities are allowed to make laws for ourselves. So with that standing in the court, that means those two are in place today, which also gives us an opening to do more in the gun legislation space. So I think that is one thing we can continue to push and look at policies. And there is data out there showing what type of policies make an impact. I think related to that, also looking carefully and thinking more about our survivor support. It really breaks my heart to say that I think we're becoming a city of gun violence survivors, just with so many shootings and communities that are hit so hard. I had the opportunity after the shooting in the West End to attend the funeral, and just seeing the line of kids outside was just absolutely devastating, right? And those kids are going to carry that trauma forever. Right. And so thinking more about how do we respond when a shooting occurs, both in the instant moment when you're in crisis mode, but ongoing, making sure that there's access to survivor resources and counseling. So I kind of wrap all of that up together when we talk about gun violence specifically. But in addition, you know, something I've learned in this work is when you think about gun violence in the community, I think of it as the last domino to fall. And those previous dominoes are, are people being paid enough to have a roof over their head, access to fresh food, access to health care? Are kids given the opportunity to participate in community events, sports, that type of stuff? So I know that I just bit off a lot there, but I do think it comes back to the systemic issues of making sure that our communities are really thriving.
You just referenced the funeral of this little 11-year-old boy who was killed in a shooting earlier this month on the West End. And there's been such a dramatic increase in the number of juveniles injured or killed by gun violence. We're going to be discussing that in more detail on the second half of our program today. How do you think council should be addressing that specifically, just the rise in these children who are being hurt and sometimes killed by guns?
Yeah, I don't think there's a magic wand solution. If there was, I think every city in the United States would be using it. So it's really partnering with the community, folks who are already doing the work. So you're going to be hearing later from folks like Mitch Morris, Bishop Tate in Avondale, who are putting together youth programs, you know, to get them involved in whether it's sports, whether it's dance, whether it's youth employment, to kind of give these kids something to do, that social interaction, that stability, I think is super duper important. I personally grew up playing sports, so I think that's a great outlet. But people, you know, making sure kids have an opportunity to do whatever it is that will feed their passion and give them that stability. That's one of the reasons why I'm really excited about the Boots on the Ground fund that the city now funds. And those go directly into community-based programs that do focus on violence interruption, mentoring, youth employment, those type of activities. And to me, making sure those resources are going directly into the community, because we have people in all 52 neighborhoods who are doing this work, right? Yeah. You can go to any community council meeting and there will be someone sitting there who says, hey, I've got this activity this weekend. We're going to do a barbecue and giveaway for the kids. Like, I've just heard it so many times. So it's giving those people and empowering them with the resources they need.
You mentioned the state's preemption laws in Ohio. Do you think the city should be advocating for changes to state law?
Well, I still wear my kind of community activist hat here, right? So me personally, Anna Albies, the individual, yes, absolutely. But I'm also very aware of the fact that in the state of Ohio, we have lines drawn for our state legislature, which it's called gerrymandering, right? It's written in a way where extremists are able to win election, re-election year after year. And us for Moms Demand Action in this space struggle because we do not feel that we will get good gun laws that reflect the will of the people until we have fair maps, because we need the state house to reflect the will of the people so we can get, you know, stronger, better gun laws. We know that the majority of Ohioans, for example, support a background check on every gun sale. And yet we can't get that passed because we have extremists in the state house who continue to win election.
You mentioned in your campaign materials the PIVOT program. Explain what that PIVOT program is, how it works, and how effective do you think that's been in the city of Cincinnati?
Yeah, so PIVOT, you're going to get me on the acronym. It's PLACE.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. But basically, it's an approach where Cincinnati Police Department will target kind of a hot spot where there's been increased violence or incidents in one spot, and then it'll be increased attention and I'm blanking on the word when you kind of patrol mm-hmm. surveillance, but also looking more deeply into, are there certain things that can be changed in this space to make it safer? So one of the case studies on the website, which I read, talked about at one point there was this kind of block where there was an abandoned field that was seeing a lot of illegal activity. Well, so the PIVOT team went in, kind of patrolled, surveilled, did surveillance. And they realized that there were firearms being stashed in the overgrown grass in this abandoned space. So one of the solutions they brought was actually mowing the grass so you couldn't stash things in that space. Mm. So it's not just the patrol and the surveillance. It's also making changes to the physical environment to make our city safer. There's a very nerdy kind of thing you can look up, but it's called crime prevention through environmental design. And it is the concept of physically altering the environment to make places safer for residents to be.
Hmm. What about, you also talked in your campaign materials about implementing a gun buyback program. A couple questions. Where do you envision the money would come from for that? And then what happens to these guns afterwards? How effective are gun buyback programs? Talk to us a little bit about all that.
Yeah, so other cities in Ohio have done buyback programs, and they've used gift cards. Like, I forget exactly the amounts, but, you know, ranging amounts depending on what type of firearms being turned in, right? Maybe a $50 gift card for something that's from World War II and doesn't shoot anymore, but much higher for maybe an automatic weapon. And I know from some of our Moms Demand Action volunteers across the state who have been in those cities, one woman on a call was like, yeah, it was great. People continued to turn in firearms even after the gift cards ran out.
Mm, wow.
And I want to share a story. I keep calling on my fellow volunteers for Moms Demand Action. One woman, she, I think it was her father or a family member passed away and left behind a firearm, and she didn't know what to do with it. And she lives out in Batavia, and she said she ended up throwing it in the lake.
Wow.
Like, she just didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, I think with a firearm buyback, making sure we get as many guns out of the community as possible to make it safer. I understand it might not always be the guns that are being used necessarily in crimes, but you're still a very big risk if a gun's just left in the back of a closet of a kid or a teenager going and finding it, or someone who's struggling with their mental health. I think I mentioned earlier the stat of having a gun in the house increases likelihood of suicide by 3 times. Mm. So getting those firearms out of the community just makes everything a little bit safer.
Yeah. And what do you envision happening with the guns afterwards? Because I know there are some gun buyback programs where they're traced to see if they've been used in crimes, and then they're resold sometimes. What do you envision happening with guns that are part of a buyback program?
Yeah,
like this?
I think that great question. I think that's where, you know, I'd want to talk with the other cities in Ohio, see what they did, what they've saw as being most effective. You know, there's also programs where they get melted down and turned into swords, mm-hmm. right? Like there are other uses. So, you know, I would be personally in favor of getting them off the streets for good, not getting them back into circulation. But again, that's a conversation I'd want to have with our city manager, other members of council. Again, trying really hard not to get ahead of myself here since I'm not yet in office. But I think that's all conversations to have.
Yeah. And figuring out what state law is about around all that. If there are state laws around that, who knows? Speaking of state laws, I've seen discussions, lawmakers returning from the Thanksgiving break or taking up a bill that would allow guns into public buildings with courtrooms. Yeah. Have you been following that? Do you think that's something that will probably pass?
I don't know about that one. I mean, I know that our Moms Demand Action team has been activated, and I've seen the emails going out where we're trying to get our volunteers to up to Columbus to testify against it. Yeah, it's wild to me. It's really this idea of guns everywhere, where even if there is a sign on the door that says no guns allowed, giving people a pathway to bring a firearm into a place that should be safe, right? We should be safe in schools and courthouses. And I just think that is very dangerous. And again, from my perspective personally, and being an advocate and activist in the space, is, you know, that those are bills that the gun lobby wants us to pass because they want guns everywhere. And, you know, I have two brothers in the military, and one of them, I was chatting with him one time, and he said, he was like, you know, when a firearm's involved, inherently things just get more dangerous. Right. So when we have guns, even if it's, you know, in someone's, you know, holster or whatever, it just, things get tense and dangerous, and emotions can escalate and impulses can take over. So, you know, it's a really dangerous bill. We as Ohioans, we as Cincinnatians should be able to go into places where it says no firearms allowed and feel safe in that environment. And I'm really frustrated that this type of bill continues to be put forth in Ohio.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll talk about the record number of juvenile victims of gun violence in the city of Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation with Cincinnati City Councilmember-elect Anna Albee, who was elected to Cincinnati City Council earlier this month and takes office in January. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Peter, thank you so much for calling. What is your question or comment?
Hey, Lucy, the pleasure is all mine. My comment is, first, congratulations to the council member-elect. Second, I am very, very excited that there will be a member of the city council who has actually had experience working with community councils. My third part of the comment is that I'm really excited about her openness and a willingness to take on gun violence. My question is, what kind of preparations does she think she has to make to open up the city's bureaucracy to other alternative forms of organizing the communities to deal with gun violence? I specifically think that the city should, for example, fund community organizers in a handful of communities as a pilot project to go door to door and organize those communities against gun violence. What is she willing to do like that?
Interesting. Thank you, Peter.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Peter, so much for the congratulations and for mentioning community councils, because I'm a big fan of community councils, and hopefully we'll talk about that soon, too. So around organizing communities, so, you know, the community partnerships Moms Demand Action has had and that I've been a witness to, you know, we have people in the community who are doing the work. And by that, I mean the people who show up when there is a shooting, they show up on the scene and they work with the family and they interface between them and CPD. They put together mentoring programs or activities or do, you know, school supplies drive. So those people are in our community. They're doing amazing, amazing work. I think, you know, the city, again, I'm trying not to get ahead of myself because I'm not yet in office. I think, you know, we should have a conversation about how we can leverage that the people are doing as volunteers out of the goodness of their heart, and how we can formalize it. You know, I think many other cities have taken different approaches to it. I hate to bring this up, but I know other cities have done like an Office of Gun Violence Prevention, you know, so I'm not sure if it takes that form or something else a little bit, having kind of a council of these people who are, you know, violence interrupters. So I think that's really important. And I think, too, to your question about the bureaucracy, you know, my day job, I'm a communications consultant, but that's a fancy way of saying I work with a lot of stakeholders, and having those conversations, sitting down with people and understanding what are the roadblocks and what are the solutions we agree on and that we can work together on. And at the end of the day, I know big picture, everyone in City Hall believes that gun violence is a top priority, right? So we all agree on the end goal, which is the reduced violence. It's how do we get there? So getting people around the table and talking through various approaches and making sure we're engaging, again, the community activists who are doing the work and understanding what resources and support they need to continue doing what they're doing and hopefully expanding it, I think is really, really important.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Peter. Thanks for listening and thank you for calling. We appreciate it. We did also get an email from Steve. Steve emails, now that the city and the county is solidly blue, when and where do you see council and you as its newest member not marching in lockstep and single file on issues in total agreement?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I'm laughing here, hopefully off mic a little bit, because if you grew up in my household, my parents and my brothers would be the first to tell you I don't really march in lockstep with anyone, you know, that we all have differing opinions. But big picture, you know, we, the people who have been elected to council for next year, we come from various different backgrounds. We bring different skill set, different perspectives. You know, one thing that I'm really excited about is I will be the first sitting member of City Council from Madisonville. So that is a new perspective, and to sit in a community where a lot has happened over the past decade, and to have been there watching kind of how people have reacted in the conversations, that's a totally new perspective that's not currently on council. I think furthermore, you know, next year there's going to be some very big conversations. We, at the end of this year, are going to be receiving the Futures Commission's report. So for those listening, the Futures Commission is a group of business leaders, labor leaders, nonprofit leaders who've been looking very carefully at the budget to figure out, you know, how the city should be spending and raising money and all that. And those are going to be big discussions. And I think, again, all of us on council come in with a different perspective on what will be the best and how to, you know, make sure that we are thoughtfully, purposely, and wisely spending and raising city resources. So I think there's going to be some really great, healthy conversations next year on council. The importance is making sure we're doing it respectfully, right? We are a team at the end of the day, and we're here to serve you all, the residents, right? That's the most important thing, is that we are listening to you, taking your feedback, engaging you in the conversation. And I'm going to be a big advocate of making sure that we have community engagement as much as possible.
Yeah. You mentioned the Futures Commission and the budget. The city's anticipating, I think it's a $30 million deficit in the operating budget next fiscal year. Do you have thoughts yet on how council should be addressing that, how you should be preparing to kind of tackle that big problem?
Yeah, so just for listeners to set the ground there, so that's $30 million deficit in the operating budget. So that is your daily services that the city delivers to you, right? Trash pickup, all that. That is different than the capital budget, which is infrastructure. And I only bring that up because the infrastructure budget is where the railroad money is going.
Yes,
so just
point.
I want to make sure everyone's clear,
right.
Clear on that, since I had a lot of conversations about that on the campaign trail. So the operating budget, you know, we as a city need to provide basic functions, right? We need to make sure we're picking up trash, that police are being able, that when you call 911, police are able to respond. When there's fire in your house, firefighters are able to be there, right? So that is absolutely vital. I really am looking forward to this Futures Commission report. Again, this group of city leaders have been looking at the budget deeply for over a year, maybe feels like longer to them. And I'm going to be looking at their recommendations and their analysis really carefully. But I think something just that's top of mind for me is making sure we're engaging residents in that conversation. Right. I'm picturing we get a binder full of results and it just gets dropped. We got to make sure that people understand what it says, that people know where the money is going now, why there is this $30 million deficit, which some of it is because COVID relief funds have run out, right? We've been using those have ended, right? But I really am passionate about making sure our residents understand the state of the city when it comes to that. So then when we think about what to do next, how to raise funds, how to use funds ongoing, that everyone in Cincinnati feels plugged into that process and it's as transparent and as engaging as possible.
Sounds like the Community Council Network could be a good way to get that information.
You know
out.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you are going to be sworn in January. What's your priority on day one? What's your first order of business?
Well, I'm going to sound like a broken record when I say gun violence prevention, aren't I? So I think meeting with everyone around, you know, like I mentioned, survivor support for gun violence, I think especially in the wake of this recent shooting, especially involving children, how do we get all the people around the right table there, not just law enforcement and city officials, but how do we get Cincinnati schools involved, right? Our kids spend the majority of their time in the schools. So how do we leverage that relationship to make sure that we are giving kids support where they need it? So thinking more about that survivor support. But then again, kind of bigger picture, I think housing is very top of mind for people across the city. You know, council member Reggie Harris and Jeff Kremerding have been doing great work there. Council member Mika Owens has a tenant's bill of rights that she's been advocating and talking about. So I think there's a lot of room there to immediately dive in and tackle it, especially given we know there was just a ballot measure around this. Mm-hmm. How do we address the concern and make sure we're doing the work?
Yeah. Well, this has been great. I have been talking with Councilmember-elect Anna Albee, who was elected to City Council earlier this month and takes office in January. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Up next, Cincinnati's had a record number of juveniles injured by gun violence this year. We'll talk about what's behind those numbers. This is Cincinnati Edition.